This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Our next guest was an architect who published designs for ecologically sound cities starting in 1968 and for a model eco-city in the Cincinnati area in the 1970s. Like many who offer technical solutions, over the years, Peter Seidel's books began to ask, what is wrong with us? Why can't we adopt obvious answers to serious problems? His 1998 book, for example, was Invisible Walls, Why We Ignore the Damage We Inflict on the Planet and Ourselves. Apparently, Peter Seidel hasn't given up yet. His latest book is titled There Is Still Time. Peter Seidel, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, I'm glad to be with you, Alex.
Just the other day, you know, I admit I considered giving up on this radio show. I thought humans are not capable of solving the problems we create. Do you feel that frustration, Peter?
Well, I feel it, but we've got to. We've got to do it. And I think there are ways to work our way through it. No magic bullets, but there are things we can do. And if we work hard at them and look for, you know, places to, wedges to get into and to push, I think we can accomplish some things.
All right. Well, let me tell you the story of a friend of mine, Jack Alpert. He was working at General Motors in the 1960s. He found the major cause of death in car accidents was people being thrown through the windshield. So as an engineer, Jack invented seatbelts, and they worked. But he was horrified when people would not wear them until decades of tickets and fines later. So what is it about human nature that even when we have a solution, we don't act to save our own lives?
That is a very good question. That is something we've really got to work on very hard. I mean, the fact is, I observe that what you're saying is true. We've got to deal with it, and we've got to find out better reasons of why we don't.
Well, I wonder if it isn't because we're absorbed with our own personal lives and can't get beyond that. I just did a show on a tremendous climate disaster in Indonesia, but it didn't reach as many people as I think it needs to, and I guess people don't care about Indonesia. So somehow we've got to get global, and that doesn't seem to be in our nature.
We evolved to live as hunter-gatherers, and this was in a very small society, a very small group. And we had to care about what was right around us. If we actually cared about something that was happening way off, a leopard might jump out of a bush and eat us. We had to care about what was right around us. And so we have developed caring what's right around us now, in the present time, not thinking about the future. If we were thinking about the future, maybe something would happen. So we had to be fast and simple. And that's the way we think.
And you also talk about the emotional self. How does that affect our ability to solve these big problems?
Well, the emotional self is necessary because one thing, well, it got me to write this book because you care. And because of that, the emotional self does a lot of good things. However, there's another aspect of it that is a real problem to deal with. For instance, every day there are 15,000 children die because of malnutrition. Now, who's moved by that? Hardly anyone. However, if they watch a television program and there's a little cute little dog gets hit by a car, they'll get all wrapped up in that. They might even send things to the station for the dog. And that way, the emotion right now that's close to us that they can feel somehow moves them. Whereas the reality of what's happening, of 15,000 children dying every day, doesn't strike them.
It is strange. And I wonder, though, how much our inability to solve problems may also be institutional. For example, do you think corporations and capitalism can really prevent a climate catastrophe?
There actually is not much incentive the way the corporation is set up. A corporation is set up for what? It's set up to basically to make money for its stockholders. That's its goal. And its stockholders are people who aren't thinking very much about the future. And they want their money now because if it doesn't make money, they're going to sell their stock and move on to buy something else. So a corporation just isn't set up, isn't organized to protect our future.
Yeah. So in a journal called Futures in 2009, you published a piece that puzzled me a little. I didn't have access to read it. It's called, Is It Inevitable That Evolution Self-Destruct? What was that about?
Well, it was a scenario. So I was asked to write a scenario about the end of civilization, the end of that. I didn't get the idea to do it. I was asked to do it. It's interesting. That's sort of the beginning of this whole thing, which led to this book. So I started thinking about it, and when you look into it, I saw that, well, maybe it's even inevitable that we're going to destroy ourselves. Because we do things, we're driven in a certain direction that do things that work in a way that don't work for our long-term good, but that evolution made us so that we work for our short-term good, what we need now. It did not make us to be concerned about our future. And in concern about what we want right now, here, we can do an awful lot of damage. And the conclusion of that is, when you think about it, it could actually lead to the destruction of civilization.
And you took another route to painting that predicament in your science fiction book called 2045, A Story of Our Future. Could you just give us a brief outlook of what's in that book?
What's in that book? Well, that book is really a story about what it would be like, putting in the form of a story, and that goes back to the emotional thing. Because when you present a lot of information about the future, people aren't as much moved by it. So I thought, well, let's try a novel. It doesn't work as what novel readers want because, first of all, they want to have a conflict on one of the first pages. It didn't have that. But it looked at a lot of things that are happening and projected where this was going, where it was headed. You know, you're talking just about corporations. There's more and more amalgamation and merging. And in this book, it ended up with 8 corporations, and they all moved on to a series of 3 different islands around the world where these 8 corporations had their headquarters. And these people associated with each other. They lived on these islands. They kept as much as they could away from, well, other people weren't allowed to come there and see how they lived. Well, anyhow, a series of things like that were things that were happening and projected into the future. Where could this lead? And that was one of the things that it led to. A lot of environmental things, of course, like global warming and spread of all kinds of things. One thing, it had a huge factory in Senegal, I think, and it was a huge place where people were starving outside. And they go to this factory just because they get fed there. And once they went into this huge building, they never got out, except on a barge which would dump them into the ocean. And there they worked because they got fed. And there they produced cheap things, T-shirts, so on, which was cheaper than you could get any place else because these people were working for basically nothing.
Back to slavery. Well, I'm wondering, you know, we talked about evolution, and one feeble hope, and maybe a scary one, is that giant global computers could help us arrange our society to avoid the worst catastrophes if we can't evolve in time. Maybe we become computer-assisted. What do you think?
Well, one trouble there would be, I think that the corporations would grab hold of the computers and use it for what they want to use it for. And I think that's what would probably happen.
Yeah, or some power-mad politicians, a dictator or something. Who controls the controllers?
Well, there's big tie-up between politicians and the business. They work together.
So has your understanding of the problem and the solution changed with your new book called There Is Still Time?
That's an interesting question. I think probably not much, but it is looking for solutions, you know, what we can do. You know, it's assuming we're starting where we are right now. We're not starting where we were in 2045. We're starting now to see to deal with the problems that we have in hand, and it looks at us. And it pretty much exposes us for what we are. And I think that a lot of these things, if they become exposed, you know, like in the back of the book, I offer some solutions. And one of the solutions is, and the solutions I divide into 2 types. One thing that what humanity ought to do to survive on the planet but we can see today what humanity is doing and not doing very well. So the other is what really committed environmentalists can do, people who really want to do something. And some of the things that they could do is they could bring together important scientists and thinkers, and they could analyze things about, like, greed, you know, what makes people greedy, why are they like this, and expose them and publish this. Because we know, you know, that happiness, and this is printed over and over again, is not related to how much money you've got or this or that. You know, and there's a lot of these things to look into and publish and make it public. And I think some of these things could help.
Now, I know some Radio EcoShock listeners feel deep in their hearts that there is not still time. The infrastructure for a 5-degree hotter world is built. We don't show any signs of changing, and major ice sheets at the poles seem committed to melting. What makes you think, Peter Seidel, that there is still time?
Well, I don't know that there really is, but there still is time to do something. And what we can do, if we really got effective at it and worked on it, we could mitigate what's going to happen. In other words, would it lead to a total extinction and all of that, or is it something, whatever we do, I think that it's going to be a pretty rough world. It's going to be a lot hotter. There's going to be a lot less food. You can say there's going to be a lot more people. They keep breeding. But however, it just simply isn't going to be able to support all those people. But there's going to be a lot of people living in terrible misery. And somehow, you know, the human species could pull through. It may not. I don't know.
By my calculation, you should be arriving at age 89 this December. Why not just sit back and see what happens? What drives you to keep struggling with ways to save ourselves?
That's a good question. I think if people care, who of us is going to be alive 100 years from now? Not very many of us. But I think we've got to care about the world 100 years from now. If we're moral people, if we're ethical people, if these things matter to us.
Well, is there anything I've missed you'd like to tell our listeners?
I think we've got to try. We've got to work. And I do think that the people who are already committed to trying to do something have to work even harder. And I think they can. And Chapter 7 of my book comes up with suggestions of things that people who really want to do something and will do something, if they have some other ideas of what to do, what they can do. On my website, which is peterseidelbooks.com, there is a thing where you can add comments, and I welcome comments there. If people have ideas of what we can do, what environmentalists can do, because we can't expect that the general public is all of a sudden going to turn around and do something big. But people who care already can do more if they think that it will be effective. And I'd like to collect ideas on that and put that on my website and put them wherever I can. And in their future editions of the book, to put it in there.
Okay, and that's S-E-I-D-E-L. So, obviously, we've been talking with Peter Seidel. His new book doesn't shy away from describing how serious, perhaps even deadly, our current overshoot and overloaded civilization is. But as the title says, Peter thinks there is still time and explains why we're hung up and how to do better. I'll put links to the book in my Radio EcoShock blog, published at ecoshock.info. Peter, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this, something very deep on my heart, as you can see.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.